our friend writer Colin Fleming. His newest book is out now. It's great. Sam Cooke, live at the Harlem Square Club, 1963. Happy to be joined on the telephone line by the Sea Dog, or is it the Z as in Zulu Dog?
I feel like the Z is implied pretty much when you think Sea Dog. Anything Sea Dog approximate, you think Zulu Warrior, right? I'm sure you always do.
Yes. So, yeah. I can't Sea separate them.
Z. Yeah, I know, right? It's like the mind-body split. You just can't do it.
How many steps did you slay today?
I feel like I've let you down because I only did 3,000. But when you say 3,000, it sounds just mighty, doesn't it? It sounds impressive, but it's really not that much.
Well, I mean, for an average person, it would be a momentous occasion for a Zulu warrior. A day.
I'll give you a time calculation. That's about a half hour of running stairs straight.
And you run. You don't walk these babies. You're running them.
Yeah. I mean, it might be like a jog. I'm not like trying to race to the top and get like an amazing time, but I'm actually like doing a version of what I call running the entire time. But I'm not like trying to be fast or anything like that. I'm just trying to remain, you know how it is when you're out and like you're technically running. That's what I'm doing. And then near the end, I go a little bit faster and I'll take them two at a time. But it's also because they're not very far apart. So when you're doing them just one at a time, that's also challenging because it's just like quick feet type of thing, like that drill, that football drill.
Right.
Between the ropes. It's almost like that without the ropes to fall over. And so, yeah, but it's about a half hour for 3,000 stairs. That's 30 times up. And it's monotonous as hell, Kimball. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, but your mind is other places. It's not like you're counting the steps as you go.
True. I am, like yesterday, I was working on a new story in my head that I had written, I think it was Sunday morning, and it was like, I don't know, 1,300 words long, and then it became 2,800 words long yesterday morning, and then I was running stairs. I got it up to like 3,000, but you also have to be careful because you don't want to mess up your count. And when I'm a guy who messes up his count, you would imagine how I handle this. I never give myself the benefit of the doubt. Like, I believe that was 27. It's like, no, you suck, you Puritan. Let's see you earn this, you fat pig. That's how I talk to myself. I'm incredibly self-verbally abusive. Like, it's so bad that I wonder if a bunch of internet trolls could hunt me down just for how I speak to myself.
Oof. Now, because you share this with me, the love of this time of year, is there anything better than getting out and doing that work in the early morning hours when you can smell the winter that's coming?
I really do like this time of year. But you know what? I also like January and February. I'm someone who's saying to a person the other day that, like, when I get up really early. I'm up at like 4 and I'm starting work and everything. But I like sometimes when it's the time when the sun should be up, but it's not up because it's just going to be like one of those gray days. Mm-hmm. So there it is at like 6:30. I actually think like, yes, suck it, sun, because I'm not a sun fan. I'm not into the sun at all. I do not dig that sun. I like being near the ocean. I like the grayness. I like, for instance, today it wasn't raining. When I was a kid, my dad would have called this spinning. I don't know if people use that term anymore.
Oh, yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
I sure
do. Right? When it's like that in between. So, like, you technically, if you pull your phone out, it's going to get some water on it, but it's not actually raining. It's like, what's going on here? So it was doing that. And I really enjoy October. And I would if I had a life and I could enjoy anything. But, like, even tonight, like with the baseball game, I mean, what more do you want, right?
Mm.
Red Sox, Fenway Park, and they've never done this, or they haven't done this in a long time since 1978 and autumn. And I'm like running the stairs, and I'm thinking like, will there be bunting at the game? Not bunting like I'm going to lay one down, but draped over like the stands. I love that stuff.
I love it indeed. Well, what a perfect segue into what we're talking about this time around, which is some entertainment for the season, starting with a wonderful October story by Saki called The Open Window.
Had a guy like you, had you read that before?
I had not read it before, but it was great. And it had me right at the name of the main character, Frampton Nutelle. I love that.
That's like one of those classic kind of, like Ethan Frome, like one of those New England sort of autumnal names. And the story is only slightly more than 700 words long. So I figured it wouldn't be too taxing. You just read it in a few minutes. But it's one of those ghost stories that's also not a ghost story. That, I mean, in some ways, it's not a ghost story at all. But it also, I think, at the same time, it calls into attention what a ghost story can be. It's almost like that 1935 horror film directed by Todd Browning, Mark of the Vampire, where you have Bela Lugosi, and he doesn't talk, and he has like his vampire bride, and he's ostensibly Dracula again. It's a remake of a Lon Chaney silent film that's been lost. And at the end, it's like, fooled you, they're not really vampires. But it doesn't really matter, because you buy in all the time up until that point. And this story is about this nervous guy. You get the sense that he's a hypochondriac, has some anxiety issues. And he secludes himself. He doesn't have like a lot of friends. He's new to this particular place. So he gets like these letters of introduction, which is just like this quaint old thing. Like you show up, it's like, I have a letter of introduction. May I come into your home? Oh, yes, you may. I really like that too. I wish we were courtly in that fashion, that we had manners. And right? I mean, wouldn't you like that? It's just like, it's for another way for people to meet. Now they just eye each other suspiciously because nobody wants to get in any trouble and have like people harass them, the mob, digital mob, all that stuff. And so he comes over and he has to spend some time at this house with this 15-year-old mischievous girl, and the French window to like the woods outside, like the moor, is open. She's like, oh yeah, my uncle and his brothers-in-law, they went hunting 3 years ago and they disappeared in the moor and they're dead. We leave it open, like, if they ever come back. And they're just people out hunting for, like, the day. And so he's going to see them coming home, their return journey, and he absolutely freaks out. And the only person who knows what's happened in the story is the 15-year-old girl. Because, like, the adults don't know, and, like, she doesn't tell anyone. So it's a secret, in a way, between you and this mischievous kid. And I like that, too.
I like that they're out snipe hunting, too.
Yeah, snipe hunting is like such a... Snipe is just such a rich... You remember the episode of Cheers?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Frasier? Like, he has like a... Like, it's funny the way they do it, too, to make it more humorous. It's like he has like the official tools of the snipe hunting trade. Like, he has a snipe bag, like all this stuff. And so they leave him out in the woods, and then they go off and like they have a steak dinner somewhere, something like that. And like he has to find his way back from. You have the sense that they're like way out in the Berkshires or the White Mountains or something like that. So yes, the idea of the snipe. It's a very droll. It's a very arch, sly humor story, and that's what Sackey would excel at, or could excel at. Not always going this particular route, but. Again, I was reading someone, just some like amateur writer, and they were saying like who like self-publishes and puts up their ghost stories, which I'm sure is horrible, on Amazon. And they were saying like, you get all these negative reviews if you don't like have monsters and everything. Thing like that, that's, first of all, you're lying. Like no one even knows you exist. But beyond that, that's not true, because this is something that gives you that, I don't want to say a twist ending, but again, it tweaks you. It's a pleasing tweak. It's not really, sometimes with a ghost story, it's not even the eventual outcome. It's sort of like the journey. That's usually the best part of a ghost story. Now, I would argue that you can do more than that, but that's not what Sackey is interested in. And it's really that progression, it's that journey that's going to be the meat of this particular story.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown, a wonderful journey as well, and a great episode for the season of our favorite, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, the ghost-to-ghost matter, and the story of a well-old dead Ian McAndrews who keeps coming to spice things up in Lake City.
You can see the difference in quality. Now, I'm not saying it's horrible, but you can see the difference in quality with this one. It's 1958. We're getting near the end for Bob Bailey. And I don't want to say males in his performance, but it's a lot different, certainly from the five-parters and even the half-hour episodes. And at this point, he's a celebrity insurance investigator, which is kind of funny in its own right, who has a radio show. So we'd spoken about this before. I don't think there's like an episode where he's like, and then I just signed a contract for a radio show. Someone just shows up in one of these episodes one day. I remember I was listening to this. Like, I heard you on the radio, Johnny Dolly. He's like, yes, I have a popular program. It's like, what? That's what we're doing? Other people have been hearing this in real time all along. It's like, you can't do that, cheater. So he's summoned to this town in New Jersey, the hills of New Jersey, like this sleepy, hollow type of town. And some guy who's dead, he's coming with an insurance policy, something like that. He's coming back. So Johnny Dolly calls up this ex-girlfriend and who was studying. She was going to study paranormal research until she realized she had to read some books. she's like, that was too much. And when he first calls her, you never call me Johnny Dollar. Like, he totally has that tone of, come on, baby girl. Like, he really does. Like, you think, like, what? You fly boots, Johnny Dollar. You're just going around like a tomcat. What else are you up to? Radio show and coolness?
And that's all. That's the best part of this whole investigation for Johnny is getting to hang out with Nancy again.
Right, but she's completely useless.
Right.
They show up in the town.
Well, because she didn't read the books.
Yeah, it's like Murder on the Orient Express, but without the sinister aspect.
Right.
Everyone is, like, banded together. So, really, it's such a ropey plot. They want to get celebrity Johnny Dollar to come in so people will learn about this and, like, boost their tourism industry. And they won't be a sleepy town anymore. They'll be, like, this, like, actuated town, and it's going to be exciting and everything. So you have, like, kind of these ropey horror house sort of effects. And, like, there's a bat, whatever it is, she's flipping out, thinking like, well, you're useless, you're just dead weight, like, here on this particular trip. But at first, like, Johnny Dollar, he goes fishing, and he loves fishing. That's his thing. That's like a staple, even like going back to the five parters and the glory run. And these guys are just like, this some like good time guys, and they want to go out speaking of steak dinner and all that stuff, and like they're ordering the whiskey, and Dollar's like, guys, can't we investigate? And sort of pretends to leave town, but doesn't really leave town, and he's not going to blow their secret. And it's just sort of like good, wholesome, fake ghost fun. I guess that's kind of like a theme. Like, you have Mark of the Vampire, you have that Saki story, fake ghost, and you have certainly fake ghosts here.
And then a very interesting episode of The Mysterious Traveler from, I think, 1951, Behind the Locked Door. This was a very atmospheric one with this lost wagon train in a cavern.
This one's pretty good. And actually, you know what? This is, that show was helmed, The Mysterious Traveler, by Robert Arthur. And Robert Arthur would go on to create The Three Investigators young adult mystery series, which I love. I mean, I still read those books now. I remember a teacher introduced me to them in fourth grade because I was the kid who was always done first. And it's like, okay, what do I do with Fleming? So I was like reading all these great books while everyone else was just whatever, dumbasses. Anyway, and so Robert Arthur, in that series, when the three investigators, before cell phones, when they need to get like a hot tip, they set up something called the ghost-to-ghost hotline, where like one person calls five friends and tells them to call five other friends. So you actually have like this, I wonder like who was hearing what, who was listening to what, reading what, that sort of thing. But this is, again, like you said, an atmospheric episode where there's this college professor. He's like, I want to go exploring. And he has like this acolyte that he takes with him. And they have this, what's the right term I have to use? Native American guide, and they're in, where are they? Arizona. And so there's this cave that's walled with all this rock. And they start talking about like the legend of like how Native Americans would entomb people or whatever. So they dynamite the rock, go into the cave. Everything's dark. They can't find their way out. And they find these wagon coaches, like an entire wagon train. And so who knows what happened? Were they captured, put in here, killed? And stuff starts going sideways. Doesn't really work out well for the guide. Doesn't work out well for the professor. And they're like these cave people who are descendants of the wagon train people.
Right. What's that big pile of fish bones all about? Ooh.
Yes. I like the touch of the fish bone. But like a lot of times you get these sort of recycled plots where they would have the same hallmarks, but maybe they would just be transposed to a different region. This is actually fairly original. I can't think of anything preceding this that was much like this. Although, you know, it's going to be a little bit similar to it afterwards, or not even like afterwards, but like Quiet Please, the episode with the thing on the Forbel board. I mean, at the end, so you have the subterranean being out of the earth. So it's kind of similar to the whole thing with the cave people. And then if you remember at the end of the episode, the thing on the Forbel board, the guy, like the oil rigger guy, he's at his house and he's like sort of married to the monster now. Yeah. So this guy in this story, the survivor, he has this creature, this woman, but still a human, I guess, like living at his house. So behind the locked door, it's a weird title, isn't it? Because it only refers to this part at the end, his home. What he has behind the door. It doesn't refer, I guess you could say it does on some level, to the cave, and there was sort of the rock door in front of it. But it's really just like his girlfriend comes over, and she's like, I miss you. What has happened? Where has our love gone? He's like, oh, baby girl, all this stuff has happened. I'll only tell you about it if you promise to leave. She's like, okay. He tells her. She stays. Goes into the room. And then it just ends with her screaming. Yeah. Like, what's going to happen? Is everybody going to get amorous?
But we'll never know. We'll never know. Finally, oh, man, I enjoyed the heck out of this. And I had not seen it before, this mid-80s Halloween safety film, which is so close to parody that it made me wonder.
It did. I almost hit you with the, if you notice at the beginning, this is from Centron Films, that this was version 2. So there's actually another version from 1977 that I haven't shared with you yet. So like almost a decade goes past and the people at Centron were like, you know what? We need to re-educate people on Halloween.
Right. People don't know the danger of using really sharp knives when they carve pumpkins.
I guess it depends, like many things in life, Kimball, how you want to look at what's going on in this particular public service film, because the talking jack-o'-lantern.
Oh, well, that was freaky.
Yeah, I would just say that if I had kids, I wouldn't let them near this jack-o'-lantern, this talking jack-o'-lantern. I'd be like, be careful of that guy. You see him pull up in a van, go the other way, because he wants to lay some mitts on you. I don't trust him at all. So he's like out there in the porch of a house, and he tells you how to be safe. It's like the way he does this each time, he's like, look in that window across the street. The house.
Do what I do and watch the neighbors through their Venetian blinds the creepy jack-o'-lantern.
Well, Zavarsi shows you like this girl cutting like a pumpkin with her dad. And like after you go through like the safety thing of that, he's like, now look in the window of that house over there. It's like, dude, like what is like, he's so creepy. And there's so many great moments. Every time he says something, it sounds like a double entendre. Like it's wrong. He's like, remember, kids, be careful what you put into you.
Yeah.
He winks. And it's like, What are we doing here? Is that like, am I sick? Am I reading too much into this? But it's like when they're cutting the pumpkin, I know you like this part.
Yes.
He's like, I'm a pumpkin, I'm a jack-o'-lantern. And he's like, it tickles. I find that it tickles when people scoop out my insides. If you were a pumpkin, you would think it tickles too. And I always think to myself, like, I don't know, man, would I? Like the whole idea of being, well, disemboweled, in effect, I don't know. It's like this S&M vibe. He's a really, really weird dude, and when that kid has the pumpkin gunk all over her hand,
oh.
He's like, she's picking up the knife. He's like, uh-oh, this could go bad. I'm like, oh, my goodness, we're going to watch this kid slice her. And then like she washes her hand off. He's like, oh, good, we can still have Halloween fun.
I picture the guys at Centron sitting around a mid-80s conference room laughing and saying, can you believe the network took this? They're going to put this on the air. This is fantastic.
Oh, I love it. At the beginning, too, you have like some really bouncy, like late, like 70s porn type of music going on.
Oh, yes.
With what we're like cutting edge. I think that's where the budget went. Like the graphics of the disembodied heads at the beginning. But I saw this one comment on YouTube from someone, and they were saying that like their father worked at Centron. And they just dreaded that day each year when the Centron, when this film like came on, they were showing it like in third grade, and people would just give this kid the business that his father was like such a tool to put this to put this together. But like, you were there. I loved that stuff at the time, and I know it's quaint and everything now, but it'll make you smile. It'll like draw a chuckle out of you. It's like, whereas like so much stuff that you see like presently, like TikTok stuff. It's just, there's nothing, right? You know what I mean? It's, it's like idiocy for the sake of idiocy. This at least, and I know this will sound strange, it has some historical value. And another thing that I like about this little film, too, is we gave people, young people, like a little more trust and freedom. And they were allowed to use their imagination and play. Because I see those kids in this film, and I think, like, yeah, that was a kick-ass time. And I remember just sitting there and, like, reading monster books and everything and get the Ben Cooper costume. And same day today, I'm sending back a book to a publisher about a horror film, and I'm just rewatching this. I'm thinking, like, you know what? I probably wouldn't have written that book. Probably wouldn't write a lot of things I write or think a lot of the ways that I've been able to think if I wasn't encouraged to have that sort of, like, freedom of play at the time. So I think it's really a public service film that's in the spirit of play. And that's how I watch it too. That's what makes it, that's what makes the humor kind of not nostalgic, but sort of like heartening to me.
You can find it on YouTube. You'll love it. 1985 Halloween safety film. Well, we touched on it before we let you go. I want to get your thoughts on tonight's one game playoff. I'm at the point now having very, I would say, low expectations of this Red Sox team back in spring training, that even if they lose tonight, I look on this as an enjoyable season. They played meaningful baseball into October. Do you think they need a win to count this as a success?
I will say that out of everyone, I was thinking about this the other day, like, you were bang on. I don't even know if you remember the conversation we had about, like, they had dropped the first three games of the season, and you had said, during one of our segments, where you thought they'd be, like, win total wise. I think you were, like, actually right pretty much on the number. The thing with this team is, I don't think there's anything sort of better than when your team is in the baseball postseason playing in October. I mean, if you're like a fan of the Yankees, the Red Sox, or the Cardinals, the Dodgers, like a real team, not like a Tampa Bay or something like that, but like one of those sort of teams where it still kind of matters. Although now I think everyone around here, the fans are mostly, they're mostly older, but they just have played such a frustrating, I mean, I'm rooting for them, of course, but they, in some ways I'm conflicted because they play such a frustrating brand of baseball. They make so many dumb errors. They make so many mental errors.
It's the most fundamentally awful baseball team I can ever recall seeing at the major league level. They can't run the bases. They play terrible defense. They don't understand situational hitting. And yet they still find ways to win.
That's the hat trick with this team. Those three things. Like, good thing they got, they made that one sort of like trade deadline acquisition that seemed surprising at the time, because at least like he'll make the pitcher like throw it within the strike zone. But they chase, they get shut down. Like, you just, the grinding out these wins at the end of the season with these guys with like ERAs of like 7 or making their first start. They get over like hyped up. I feel like they chase things and the base running. I mean, like, I posted on Twitter the other day, the whole Verdugo thing. And, like, he came through. He owed his teammates.
Yes.
After whatever the hell he was doing when he got in that ridiculous, like, fourth-grade pickle. And so, and then you have J.D. Martinez, this guy, tripping over the bait. Like, he's not even available to pinch hit. Like, what kind of, like, softness is that? They're just a very frustrating team. I think Rafael Devers, he's not obviously going to win the MVP, but he saved their bacon a lot throughout the year, and especially at the end. And I feel sort of good because Eovaldi got shelled last time he pitched against the Yankees. So I think that's less likely, got that out of his system. He's always been good against them. I think he's had what's his best year, his career year, for what, 11-9, whatever that's worth. So then again, as I said to someone today, I hope the Red Sox win so we can get a few more games, but I just don't see either of these two teams getting past the Rays. I think they're a legitimately really good team.
Yeah, I'm with you on that as well, but it'll be fun tonight while it lasts. Colin Fleming, the new book is great. We've talked about it, but it's worth your time to get your hands on it and read Sam Cooke Live at the Harlem Square Club, 1963. Check out the website as well, ColinFlemingLit.com. Enjoy the game tonight, Colin. We'll check in with you again next Tuesday.
All right. Sounds good, sir.
The Z-Dog with us here on Downtown.